On this week's 51%, a lot of Americans' resolutions for the new year involve saving money. But could you avoid shopping for a full year? We speak with content creator Alicia Berman about how her personal no-buy year helped free her from a shopping addiction.
I was trying to buy the life that I wanted instead of actually just going out and living the life of the person that I wanted to become.
We also hear from Dr. Shea Butler on how to strive toward being better, not perfect. I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on, I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it, I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse King. Every year around this time, surprise, surprise, I like to talk about New Year's resolutions, or just check in with myself and think about the areas where I want to grow. Breaking habits and starting new ones is hard. A 2023 poll from Forbes Health found most Americans give up on their resolutions in less than 4 months. I think my resolution last year was to start working out regularly, and yeah, that didn't happen. But I've been wanting to brush up on my budgeting skills too, and I'm not alone. Next to health, saving money is one of the most popular resolutions. Lately, there's been a growing trend of people online, particularly women, challenging themselves to cut off their spending almost entirely. Alicia Berman is a Brooklyn-based content creator and marketer in the beauty industry, but in 2024, she challenged herself not to buy anything she didn't need.
Style rules that I now have after 8 months of not shopping. I still have 4 months left to go on my
It's called a no-buy year, and the term is not really accurate. You'll see some people call it low-buy, because most of us have bills to pay, food to eat, places to go, friends, family, and healthcare to keep in mind. But by sticking to the essentials and not spending money on things like extra clothing or beauty supplies, Berman says she was able to pay off more than $33,000 in debt last year and confront a longtime shopping addiction. Now, Berman is not a financial advisor, and simply saving money does not touch on things like investing or retirement planning. Some people just can't make a no-buy year work, and Berman's own no-buy year wasn't perfect. But by turning it into a fun challenge, rather than a personal punishment, she says she was able to adopt healthier spending habits long-term and explore why she was shopping so heavily in the first place.
I realized toward the end of 2023 that my finances were just way more dire of a situation than I'd realized. And I realized that I had just really toxic habits around shopping, around spending, around money. I was super impulsive. And so I was like, you know what, I'll just do a no-buy year to kind of wrangle in the debt. I'm the type of person where, like, I like to make lemonade out of lemons. And if I am faced with a negative situation, I always find a way to turn it into like a positive or make it something fun. So I was like, you know what, I'll document it on TikTok. I don't really see a ton of it on TikTok, so I'll just kind of use it as my visual diary. I only had like 150 followers at the time, and I was kind of like, well, this isn't really going to go anywhere. Anyway, so January of last year, 2024, I started filming really rudimentary, rough videos, and I began my no-buy year. And literally, probably within the first 3 weeks, I already broke it. So I learned pretty quickly that this was more than just stopping shopping. It was a lot more complicated than that. And that's kind of when I started realizing that what we were dealing with looked more like shopping addiction instead of just like some quirky, you know, oh, I'm a shopaholic, I just am bad with money. Like, no, actually I have a legitimate compulsive spending disorder. So I began working with my therapist and just kind of tackling the deeper issues that led to the situation that I was in. And that brings us to 2025, where we're still doing the no-buy, but we have a lot more insight and tools in our arsenal to tackle it.
Well, I'm glad you were able to get help and like tackle it more fully. Was it a particular item or like category of items that you found yourself buying a lot, or was it just spending across the board?
No, I weirdly like have no interest in certain areas and then keen interest in others. Blame it on the ADHD. But I work in the beauty industry. I buy clothes, I buy makeup. But definitely clothes. I'm not as much of a beauty hoarder as others. I'm much more of a clothing person. And let's just say I don't buy affordable clothing. It's very much lots of like secondhand designer. And I think it's really interesting because I was buying most of my clothing secondhand. And so I was like, oh, it's sustainable, blah, blah, blah. You can shop sustainably and still overconsume. And that was something that I didn't understand. And that was a piece that I was missing, is just how much I was overconsuming, even though I thought I was shopping ethically or sustainably.
So I know you say you broke the no buy within a few weeks, but when you were getting ready to start, were there rules that you initially set out for yourself? Like, was it a strict no buy or just a no buy when it came to clothing?
So for me, I think that like just because you break your no buy doesn't mean that you're not on a no buy year. I think that it's the intention behind it. So for me, I have a strict list of rules. It's like I'm not allowed to buy clothes. I'm not allowed to buy makeup. I have certain like areas where I have a little bit of leeway. So like if I'm in Paris or like if I'm traveling or on vacation, I'm allowed to shop because the logic behind that is like, if you're not shopping for 50 weeks out of the year and you're shopping the 2 weeks that you're on vacation, you're really not going to be able to do the damage that you would do if you were shopping the other 50 weeks of the year as well. Also, setting aside money from savings for shopping if you're going to shop on vacation, it's just like practicing intentionality. But I think the thing to note with a lot of these, because it's not, if it were just like some silly social media challenge, it wouldn't have. It's much, much, much deeper than that. I think that there are people certainly who treat it as like a social media challenge, but for me, it was much more about like real issues that I was dealing with and tackling those. So, I think a lot of people focus on the no, like breaking the no buy, but ultimately, in my perspective, like I was 100% successful in my no buy because I dealt with my shopping issues. And I think that, of course, on social media, that everyone's really guilty of black and white thinking. And they're like, oh, you broke your no buy. You're not doing this. And it's like, well, no, I am, because I'm still trying my hardest to adhere to these rules. And I think that's something I was very transparent about it on social media. And what a lot of people have said is that that actually helped. They were trying to stop shopping. And when they slipped up, they felt like they just completely fell off the wagon and had failed. And I was like, no, just pick yourself back up. It's a momentary lapse. Like, we're still on this journey. Like, keep going. And I think, me talking about my failures helped other people not feel so isolated in their failures.
That's great. What was it that you think maybe fed your shopping?
I mean, I think with all things, it comes from, at a base level, a desire for acceptance, either by myself or others. I think also like the philosopher who came up with this concept is actually pretty problematic, but there's this concept of mimetic desire where we see things on others and therefore we want it. I think that that kind of removes the concept of free will from the equation. I don't think it's as simple as that. But he basically posits that because we see things on other people, we're programmed to desire it. There's certainly an element of that in play. I think, that's why social media is such an effective marketing tool, is because we see other people with things, and we ourselves desire it. But yeah, I think the reasoning behind my shopping was much more emotional, yearning for feelings of acceptance, yearning for a sense of identity. I think a lot of people try to acquire an identity through their purchases. And that's, to a certain extent, how you present outwardly is an aspect of your identity. But I think for me, figuring out what I actually liked and figuring out hobbies, finding things I enjoyed that didn't involve shopping, really kind of reprogrammed my brain in terms of the pleasure and the enjoyment that I derived from shopping. I think before it was just like a mindless dopamine hit coming from a place of insecurity and lack. And now I see it as like shopping is a utility for me to better express myself. And if something isn't going to meet that aim, then I don't need to be purchasing it.
I think that's a good way of putting it. You know, like, full disclosure, part of why, you know, your story and this idea piqued my interest is because in the past few months or so, I started getting really into perfumes, and which is a slippery slope, by the way. I've been trying to think lately, like, okay, when will the number of perfumes I have be enough for me? You know, right now I think I have 7 or 8 bottles, and, you know, I can't afford to become a collector or for this to become like a thing. So, you know, but it's really tempting, and I've been trying to interrogate why I want to shop. And I think for me, part of the reasoning has been that, you know, I've been in grad school, I've been stressed out, I've been mostly cooped up inside, either working or doing schoolwork. And so, you know, that shopping does give that dopamine hit of just, you know, oh, I'm going to treat myself today. I'm going to give myself a little bit of a moment. And so I actually ended up re-gifting some of those perfumes over the holidays because I decided in the long run that they really weren't for me. So I think the idea of just cutting back on spending across the board has been on my mind lately and, you know, been trying to think about maybe some of the best ways to break a habit before, I guess, it really, really starts. You documented your journey for the whole of 2024, but do you think you would have learned the same lessons if you had only done it for a month or two? I see some people maybe just doing like, you know, short stints of no buys.
People can do it however, you know, they feel works for them. I think some people, a no buy is completely unrealistic. Like if you have children, I think for some people, they can be even more like monk mode and conservative than I am. Like, I think that there's a million different ways to do this. It's just about finding what works for you. For me personally, a more realistic and moderate approach is certainly going to be more successful because I think for me, it's about finding something that works in the long run. On the long run, it's not, I'm not doing this just for a year. This is like long-term lifestyle changes that I'm trying to make. And if it's something where like, you want to be really strict for 1 month and rewrite your relationship with shopping, that's amazing. If you want to be a little bit more lenient and moderate in your approach, like I'm doing, you can probably extend it for an entire year, if not longer. Like in my case, I'm extending it indefinitely until I'm out of debt. And then I'm going to reevaluate. But I think also, you know, building savings, it's not just about getting out of debt. I also need to build savings. And I think that this is kind of like, I'm repairing 12 years of poor spending habits in 2 years. So it is a bit of like trying to undo the past, but also set a new course for my future. Because I think if I'd continued down this path that I was on before last year, home ownership, retirement, all of these things would have eventually become inconceivable. You know, I just was asking myself, December 2023, I was like, is this really the life I want to live? Do I really want to be at the mercy of my possessions? And I think also like, you know, I'm 35 years old. I've had a career for 12 years. If you're always in debt and you have no savings, you're effectively indentured to your job. So I didn't really like the idea that like, I didn't have the option. Not that I love my job. I'm not trying to leave it, but I, you know, I'd at least like the option that like, God forbid something happens, you know, I'm going to be okay. And I have the flexibility to ensure that. I think shopping was preventing me from actually having the life that I wanted to live. I was trying to buy the life that I wanted. Like I was buying clothes in order to kind of better embody the person that I wanted to become, instead of actually just going out and living the life of the person that I wanted to become. Building savings, lowering my debt, all of those things have kind of like been more of an exercise in self-actualization than shopping ever has been, you know, because now it's like, I have more autonomy, I have more power, I have more freedom, just in my own life. That's really what not having debt and having savings affords you. Shopping can't buy you happiness, but having money in your bank account and not having debt will absolutely bring you a lot more mental ease.
Do you have any advice for those who might want to try a no-buy year? Like, you know, what did you do to help put off the urge to shop?
Physical activity, like, because I think a lot of times when we get this urge to shop, and I'm not a psychologist, but I'm sure a psychologist can give you a little bit more color and nuance to this. But I think when we feel that urge to shop, a lot of times what it is, it's kind of this buzzing feeling, you know, it's like, oh, like what I want this, I want that, like whatever. And then you actually do go shopping and you feel elated because that's the dopamine. And then you buy the item, the dopamine goes away, there's a bit of a crash. So that's kind of just a continuous cycle. If you break that cycle by finding a new source for that dopamine, so whenever I get that kind of like itchy, buzzy urge to shop or spend or whatever, I just go for a run, go for a walk, go do something to kind of like A, divert that energy, but B, find a new alternative, healthier source of dopamine and endorphins.
That makes sense. I'm not gonna lie, there's a part of me that was hoping you'd say something other than exercise, but yeah, that makes sense.
That's a really good one for when you have the urge, like when you feel the urge. But if you're engaged in a hobby or like reading a book, you kind of have like a lot of people's hobby is shopping. Like, I'm serious. A lot of people, their only hobby is shopping and going out to eat and drinking. Like that's all they have going on. And I know this because I was that person. If you factor in reading or video games or just some kind of like hobby where you're able to kind of shut your brain off, it's soothing, it's mindless, but also mindful. It's not like a brainless doom scrolling like on TikTok. I think a lot of people, when they're bored, they just look at social media or they look at shopping websites. And if you replace that with a hobby that's positive, you know, reading, cooking, something just mentally engaging, eventually that urge to zone out on the Saks website goes away.
I know you work in marketing, but has this changed your relationship with social media and things like YouTube? Because so much of what we're fed on those sites are ads or videos disguised as ads.
Yeah, I immediately scroll. If I see anything that's kind of like sponsored content, I already had a bit of a, because I work in marketing. So I have like a heightened spidey sense to advertising because I do it professionally. But, you know, now I'm kind of just like, if I see someone that promotes TikTok Shop or promotes Shein or does a haul or anything, I will flat out block them because it, that type of content doesn't trigger me, but it does enrage me in a way that few other types of content do. Just because I've always cared about environmentalism, and I see now more than ever, like just how badly our overconsumption is contributing to the climate crisis. When you see people who are still like in it, and you're trying to spread this message of like buy less, and there's other people who are like glorifying buying as much as humanly possible, it's really frustrating. So social media has become kind of like a minefield in terms of that. But I think I've done a really good job of curating my For You page. I don't get those videos. There was one of like this Target jacket, and I was like, stop buying it, it's so ugly. And I went, unfortunately, like viral in the wrong way. I got a lot of heat for that video, but you know, I think a lot of people aren't critical of the goods they're buying, and they should be.
Has it changed your relationship with your wardrobe as well?
Oh yeah. I feel like I've done, because in 2023, I did like a wardrobe clean out. Last year, I was like, I'm not going to do a wardrobe clean out until the end of the year. I'm going to sit with my clothes for a full year, and I'm going to kind of just like see what gets worn, what doesn't get worn, see what I want to wear, what I don't want to wear, versus like impulsively getting rid of things. Basically, I was able to go through and like highly curate my closet. Everything that's in my closet now is a total representation of like who I am as a person, and I stand by every item that I have in there. In order for me to want to purchase something in the future, it has to meet that criteria. And I have a one in, one out policy. So like, if I want to buy something new, it means I need to get rid of something. If I'm not willing to get rid of something, it means that I don't need anything new. If I'm not willing to part with something, I can't buy something. And I think that's a rule I will have ideally for the rest of my life.
Well, Alicia, thanks so much for joining us today. What was your biggest takeaway of your no-buy year?
The no-buy year was hard, really only for the first few months. And then after that, once I actually started seeing like the financial benefit, it became so much more rewarding. And weirdly, this was like one of the best years of my life over the last like 15 years. This, and I wasn't buying anything. So I bought some stuff, but it like I was buying significantly less than I've ever bought in the past. And this was definitely, I don't think my year would have been as good if I hadn't done that. I paid off $35,000, almost $35,000 worth of debt. Like I paid off $33,000.
Alicia Berman is a content creator and marketer documenting her journey away from consumerism through her no-buy year. You can find her on Instagram and TikTok at Alicia Berman. Next week, don't worry, we'll bring you some more specific financial tips and tricks and how to implement them in your new year. I think one of the big things Alicia mentioned there was that analyzing your habits and making changes is a lifelong practice. It's about baby steps. It's okay if the goals you set out for yourself this year aren't perfectly achieved right away, or if you break a resolution within a few weeks. Our next guest is a self-described recovering perfectionist. Dr. Shea Butler is a motivational speaker and the author of Better, Not Perfect, From Hot Mess to Life Success. Butler is leading a movement of women who are learning to give the same grace to themselves that they so freely give to others. She spoke with WAMC's Sarah LaDuke.
Well, my journey had been a pursuit of perfection for much of my young adult and adult years. There were some early failures, some early traumas that made me adopt a never again attitude. Sort of the reverberating consequences and outcomes of those early failures. I was being judged, and then I was self-judging, you know. So I said, I don't ever want to feel this judgment, the weight of this societal judgment, the weight of this community judgment. And so I said, the way to not feel it is to not fail again. And so I adapted a no failure rule, and I became a perfectionist early in life. And that journey, it did not lead to the fulfillment that I thought it might. While I may have been able to put on appearance of not failing because I was able to learn better how to hide my failures. I didn't stop failing, but I learned better how to hide them. I was not living an authentic life, and the journey I was on, there was no fulfillment, there was no abundance, there was achievement, but no abundance. And so I had no feeling of accomplishment, or when an accomplishment would come, it would come without feeling. And it would be, okay, I got this award, now on to the next. There would be no sitting with it, no honoring myself, no honoring the people who saw things in me that they wanted to highlight, uplift, award. I was just on to the next. And there was no fulfillment. It became the early version of gaming, Pac-Man. I was Miss Pac-Man.
Sure, just going. Nom
Just
nom nom
going.
nom. Yeah.
Just going. At some point, I hit a wall, and I talk about that wall, and I talk about that journey. And then the right before, chapter one is titled A Hot Mess. And I learned through that process that the goal is not and should not be perfection. The goal should be better. How do I get better? How do I be better one day at a time? What does better look like for me? You know, not what does better look like for what everyone else says better should be. Not what better looks like for someone else, but what does being better and looking better and living better look like for me?
And let's talk about that. What does feeling better, living better, what does that look like for you? How have you found your way to it?
Wow, what better looks like for me is dropping this need to show up looking like I have it all together. And rather instead showing up, feeling like, okay, honoring what the day is for me, living in the more mindful present moment and accepting myself in that moment and whatever that looks like. So some days it's a great day and I'm feeling really on top of the world. And some days it's a struggle, but I'm showing up. And better means being my best self for that day, and learning how to honor what that is instead of judging what that is. And, you know, that for a lot of my life, I lived with a lot of shame. one of the things, and I'm not sure who said the quote, but one of the things that was shared with me about the word shame is an acronym for self-hatred at my expense. And so I talk about the journey of getting to a place of learning who I was so that I could eventually love who I was. And I'm still on that journey, Sarah. I have to tell you, you know, some days I get it, and then other days I wake up and the list is long of the things I didn't do that I should have done. So there's an intentionality that I've had to adopt about not staying in that place. You know, I can visit it, but I can't stay there long, and I need to visit it in the right mindset. So it's a constant, everyday, intentional, sometimes difficult, but most times rewarding, knowing self-knowledge, building self-awareness, increasing self-love, and then showing up authentically in the spaces and places that I've been invited into.
It seems like a big part of this achievement, of this realization of your existence and your life, is to try to get ahead of other people experiencing the shame that you experienced, to help them get to where you are now faster by imparting what you have learned and what you know. You include QR codes in the book that guide people to exercises and health and heart practices that they can do. Why is helping other people, why is sharing what you've learned and what you know so important to you?
You know, it was a journey of learning that is me, that is my purpose for this season of my life. You know, one of the things I do is I do speak to audiences, mostly women, but I speak to all because I think this is a message that resonates with all. And I take them through what is an Eastern practice, a Japanese practice, using the philosophy of Ikigai, and that's finding meaning for life and finding purpose. And I am a believer that we don't have one purpose, you know, and I think that so many people are heavily weighted with this notion of, I've got to find my purpose. I don't know my purpose. I'm longing to know my purpose. And I understand that. That was me for a long time too. But then in living life and in retrospect and in connecting with my faith and learning other practices of this pursuit of purpose, I learned that really we live in a space and place where we can embrace purpose for a season. And in this season of my life, the manifestation of how I help others, which has kind of shown up all my life, but in the manifestation today, it is in writing my story, telling my truth, meeting other people while I'm out talking and sharing about the book, and hearing them come up to me afterward during the book signing and whispering their truth in my ear and asking for help and saying how they relate and how they connected. They don't maybe have my exact experiences. They may not talk about the experience of being a teen mom or talking about the experience of failing out of college or losing a beloved young one and living in grief young in your years and, you know, the messiness of bad relationship after bad relationship. Some people very much relate and that resonates with, and other people just extrapolate from it and find connections in their own lives where they felt shame or judgment and had to overcome and conquer feelings of depression or anxiety. And they say thank you. And I am honored by the thanks because it shows I am truly living the purpose that I've been seasoned for now at this point in my life. And that's very important to me. It's very important to me because in my career that has been that of a higher ed executive for over two decades, mm-hmm. I have spent time with young people, and I have seen millennials in their college age and Gen Zs in their college stage. And the one thing I think that has been common to many is needing to belong, this desire for belonging, this desire to fit in, this desire to feel connected, this desire to find what their purpose in life is. And so I'm speaking to that audience, and I'm speaking to the audiences of me, the Gen Xers. And I've found that the book even resonates with boomers. So
even them.
Even them.
Of course.
That was author and motivational speaker Dr. Shea Butler speaking with WAMC's Sarah LaDuke about her book, Better, Not Perfect, From Hot Mess to Life Success. To learn more about her work, you can check out Dr. Shea, that's S-H-A-I, butler.com. Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio based in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at our website, wamcpodcast.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can stay in the loop on all of WAMC's shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King for 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half. He was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. A nightmare down the hall.